Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Hi, and welcome. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Today we'll be talking with two women steeped in experience with and passion for the travel industry. We'll explore current and future trends and the state of travel for those in midlife. Carol Lee Barnes is managing partner of the tourism practice at Development Counselors International, the leader in marketing places, and an elective officer of the Society of American Travel Writers. Since joining DCI 18 years ago, she has worked for destinations on every continent except Antarctica. Carol Lee has been the strategic thinker behind destination marketing campaigns that have brought visitors to places like Chile, Namibia, Tasmania, Australia. She loves that each and every day she helps create jobs for people in local communities and improve their quality of life through tourism. For more than 30 years, Bruce and Diana Meyer, both members of the Society of American Travel Writers, have traveled the world in search of intriguing stories, people, and destinations. They specialize in soft adventure, heritage, and general destination travel features, as well as profiles of craft artisans and the cultures reflected in their work. The couple can be found in such publications as USA Today's Go Escape, the Chicago Tribune, AAA Publications, the Dallas Morning News, the Los Angeles Times, and the Family Vacation Critic. She is the author of Day Trips from Kansas City, Nebraska, Off the Beaten Path, and Mysteries, Myths, and Legends of Kansas for the Globe Pequot Press. So welcome, Carol Lee and Diana.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start by saying you must love your professions, since it appears to me as if you're always on the move. Tell me a little bit about your journey and your passion for this work. Carol Lee?
I got into this line of work about 20 years ago, and I have to say it happened as a result of what I like to call my quarter-life crisis. I was in my early 20s and realized I was really good at marketing, and that was the field that I was working in, but I wasn't really a fan of the type of marketing I was doing. So I said to myself, you know, what do you really love to do? And I said, well, I really love to travel. I wonder if travel marketing is a thing someone can do. And it turns out it's a huge global industry. It's actually called destination marketing. And I made the jump into that field by working for a tourism board, and shortly after that to my current agency, Development Counselors International, and have successfully joined the ranks of destination marketers and climbed up that corporate ladder.
And Diana?
And mine is somewhat of a similar path to Carol Lee's. I'm a career journalist with all the appropriate degrees in journalism, and I was actually working at the NBC affiliate in Davenport, Iowa, when I met my husband, and we had had just a very difficult couple of days at work, and ended up going to Chicago for one of the big ethnic festivals that's always held up in Grants Park, and we were having such a great day. He was walking around taking photos, and I'm like, gosh, I'd love to do a story about this kind of stuff rather than some of the ugly stuff that I had been reporting on. And he said, oh yeah, wouldn't it be great someday just to quit our jobs and travel the world? And he's a photographer, so, you know, take pictures and write stories. We got married, and 3 weeks after we got married, I sold my first travel story, and it was about a backpacking trip in the Adirondacks of New York. And my husband quit his traditional job a few years later, and our son was in the first grade, and I thought, oh my God, if I'm going to ever do it, I'm going to do it now. And so I quit my job, and somehow in the last 21 years, we've paid for a house, sent a child to college on 2 freelancer salaries, and worn out 2 passports and 4 pairs of luggage and seen the world, and we absolutely love what we do. We can't even keep the calendar straight for so many trips and things we're traveling, and there's still so many other places that we haven't seen and want to do and see.
How do you explain to people the allure of travel, Diana?
Well, either you get it or you don't. There are plenty of people I know and love and adore them, and they are 100% happy to stay, you know, in their home and in their community, and they live very productive lives. Mark Twain has a very famous quote that's used often in our business, and I've printed it out here. I'll read it to you if it's okay.
Sure.
Travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness, and many of our people need it sorely on these accounts. Broad, wholesome, charitable views of men and things cannot be acquired by vegetating in one little corner of the earth all of one's lifetime. Mark Twain says that, and of course we know Mark Twain is brilliant, but travel is indeed fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Every time I'm somewhere and meet somebody new, particularly on another side of the world, and you're meeting people from a culture for the first time, and you start to understand why they do what they do, and it's not unusual, it's just different than what we do. It really does open your mind to a broader perspective, and it is so educational. I mean, from the day my son was born, we drug him all over everywhere. I mean, he had a passport when he was 3 years old, and I think it's just absolutely the best education you can have. And in this day and age, when there's so much strife and bitterness between cultures and misunderstanding between people, I think travel and experience other people in their culture is more important than ever. And so I feel like in my tiny, itsy-bitsy, tiny way, if I can help people understand another part of the world and kind of break down that barrier or stereotype or something, feel like I've contributed something. That's from my brain. And I think that sounds very altruistic or something, but that's it. Sometimes I think I can help one person understand that these people in this country are not all bad people, then I've accomplished something.
Carol Lee?
Yeah, you know, in addition to sort of getting that perspective, I think one of the great things about travel is it helps you learn who you are. You know, when you're out there talking to people and learning their perspective, or you're put in circumstances where you're not quite sure, these are different than how things are at home, you're not quite sure what to do next, you really learn about yourself and how you respond to different situations, which makes you come home being a smarter and a more capable person. I think it also helps in developing relationships, whether it's relationships with new people that you're meeting all along the way, or, you know, relationships with traveling companions. I love to use the example of traveling with my mother. I hadn't really spent a whole lot of time with my mother for probably since, you know, I had left home, and a couple years ago, we decided to take a trip to China. And not only did we learn all about China, but in those, you know, 15 days together, we learned a lot about each other from our adult lives and sort of looking at the world through the lens of someone in their 70s and then somebody in their 40s, and how our perspectives of China and our perspectives of ourselves just changed by spending that time together. So I think it gives you a real sense of who you are and helps develop that sense. And it gives you a real step forward in terms of building relationships with other people as well.
Tell me a little bit about the history of travel writers and about the travel business. Carol Lee?
So I'll let Diana talk a little bit about travel writers, and I'll jump more into the travel business itself. But just to give some perspective and some context, one out of every 18 Americans is employed in some way, either directly or indirectly, in a travel or tourism-related industry.
Wow.
It's actually a top 10 employer in 49 of the 50 U.S. states and in Washington, D.C., so it's a really, really big business. And globally, that can be even more impactful, particularly with developing countries, where a lot of the jobs are actually dependent on visitor arrivals. So that gives you a little bit of perspective in terms of the scope of the tourism industry itself. And Diana can talk a little bit about the history of travel writers.
The history of travel writers, I guess that would go back as far as Marco Polo and anyone who traveled the great Roman trails. Even in this country, it goes back as far as Lewis and Clark. They were the original travel writers, I think, in this country, and the great journey they kept and the journals they kept. It was mandated of them by Thomas Jefferson to publish stories from their experiences. And then, of course, you know, Mark Twain and Hemingway and Steinbeck are also great travel writers. But Carol Lee and I are both members of an organization called the Society of American Travel Writers. And it's roughly 1,100 members in North America. We have Canadian members and a few in Mexico and a few in some of the Caribbean islands. And this organization just celebrated its 60th anniversary. And it started out as just kind of a gathering of travel editors who realized that their work as travel editors in newspapers was quite a bit different, had different challenges and a different purpose in many ways than, you know, your political editors and all the other staff that went along with the great newspapers. And since that time, the travel editors started inviting freelance writers writers like myself, and then we have another section of the organization that is for public relations professionals, and that's what Carol Lee is, an individual who represents some of the great destinations around the world. And, you know, it becomes her job then to help share the message and provide some of the research and information. My job then is to experience and translate the story and try to sell it to different editors, and certainly in this modern era of travel journalism, blog about it on my own sites and things like that. As Carol Lee said, there are a lot of people involved in it. There's another organization I'm a part of that's just slightly older than SATW, and that's the Midwest Travel Writers Association. And that's about 100 people who are based in 13 states of the Midwest. And they were founded a couple of years earlier than SATW. So as a professional organization and professional recognition, we've been around, you know, 65 years or so. And there are a lot of people out there who make an income. Some people, you know, it's a part-time income or a supplementary income. And then there are plenty of people like myself and my husband who are full-time freelancers who generate an income by traveling and then communicating about it.
Let's talk about travel in the U.S. Approximately how many people travel each year? What are the demographics surrounding this? How many more stats can you offer the listener?
Well, last year Americans took 2.2 billion trips for both business and leisure purposes. 2.2 billion. A majority of the U.S. travelers and the travel that we do here is usually within the United States. And that's not too surprising. We have a huge and a very diverse country. So a lot of the travel that's done here is done within the country. And a lot of the travel done within the country is actually done by car. So it's people often visiting friends and relatives. Even that trip to grandma's for Thanksgiving, that qualifies as a trip from a statistical purpose. But when we do go abroad, a lot of our travel for those traveling internationally is actually to Mexico or Canada. Those are the top two destinations for Americans traveling abroad. And that's probably not surprising because those are our border countries. It's pretty easy to get to both destinations. When you have travelers that are going further afield, it probably doesn't surprise us that a lot of them are going to Europe. A lot of us can trace our roots, our heritage to European countries like the UK or France or Italy or Germany. It's quite popular these days for people to go back and try to explore their roots and see where they're from. If you're not traveling to Europe, chances are you might be headed to the Caribbean. There's a lot of U.S. travel that goes to the Caribbean. Places like the Dominican Republic come at the top of the list, as well as Jamaica. So that kind of gives you a sense of where people are going. When they're traveling overseas, that's obviously a plane trip. And thankfully, more and more people are getting passports. More and more Americans are getting passports to be able to open up that opportunity to travel abroad. And that was really stimulated a number of years ago when it became a requirement to get that passport for travel to Mexico and Canada. But the side benefit has been that it made people a little bit more excited about, oh, where else can we go now that we've been to Mexico and Canada? Where else can we use this new passport?
I happen to be an inveterate traveler, and I will say that as times have moved along, it's gotten so expensive to travel. The first question would be, must you have money to travel? And secondly, if you don't have money and you can travel, by what means would you do so?
Oh, you know, so much of that is such a personal choice. And I think a lot of that evolves with the age that we are. I have a young colleague that I like to think I've kind of mentored in this business a little bit. And she has been around the world and sleeps on couches everywhere. I mean, she's just the ultimate couch surfer, and Airbnb is something that is made for her and her generation. And so if you're comfortable with the sharing sites and resources like Airbnb and Uber and different things like that, oh, that makes travel so very rich in many ways because, yes, you are staying in people's homes and actually interacting with individuals who live in a community. So in that sense, you can travel very frugally. Travel for some people is just putting on a backpack and hitting the Appalachian Trail or Pacific Crest Trail or any great hiking trails. And those are certainly opportunities to have some great travel experiences in the world without a great deal of expense.
I think that there's obviously different ways to travel, and I love to use my my own family as an example. I have a sister who has 10 children. She is a stay-at-home mom, and her husband is a teacher. But every year, for 2 months in the summer, they pile all their kids into their van, and they actually head somewhere in America. And she is the queen of finding great value, whether that's state campsites or looking at museums on their free days or the pay-what-you-can days, looking at the national parks as places to explore. And she's been a great example of how you can show your kids different places throughout the United States when you don't have a big budget to spend by spending time on the research process and digging into what experiences are available at a very good value point. That said, there are a lot of people, particularly in the baby boomer audience, who want to spend a little bit more money and would prefer someone else to plan their travel. And the great part about American travel is there are wonderful travel agents out there that specialize in luxury travel and are willing to help people plan that customized vacation experience if that's what they're looking for.
I just returned from a conference focusing on travel bloggers, and there are like a million blogs out there on travel destinations, and so many people specialize in budget travel or, you know, stretching your money as far as you can. Depending on your interest, depending on your personality style and what you want to see, if you research it a little bit and tap in with those experts and professionals who really have their nose to what's going on in budget travel, traveling in the off season and the shoulder season, and Carol Lee said just little things like 3 days at museums and discounts on any number of things, you can save a fortune, particularly if you travel in the off season. That's when you're going to save some good money.
What are some of the latest travel trends and the current hottest spots? And I wondered if you could tell me what the last 10 or 20 or 30 years has been like. Does this change by generation or by decade, Carol Lee?
Yeah, there obviously is change in what is considered the current hot spots. Interestingly, this year is the centennial of the National Park System, and one of the things that we're automatically seeing because of the fact that there's been a lot of investment in talking about and promoting America's national parks is we're seeing increases in arrivals to national parks this year. That's something that was popular years and years ago and then sort of fell out of fashion, but now arrivals are back on because people are recognizing the value of what the National Park System has to offer in terms of natural scenic beauty, a way to get outdoors and bond with your family or your friends. There's a lot of offerings at a great price point in the park system. That said, we're also seeing a change in the types of cities people are interested in exploring. You know, we've seen cities, what I would call second-tier cities, really burst onto the scene, like Denver and Nashville and Portland over the last few years. And some of that is seeded by some pop culture TV shows that are happening that feature those places. And people watch shows like Portlandia or Nashville and say, oh, that looks really, really neat and interesting. I want to go visit that place. But the truth is, when they come back and tell their friends and family that they've been to Nashville and this is the type of experience they had and they got to see live music and really engage with performers, it gets their friends and family excited about having that opportunity as well. So that's the type of change that one of the types of changes that we have seen.
Sure.
And another change, if I can just jump in there a little bit, two points I'd like to make. One is small ship cruising. First of all, cruising has taken off, has just exploded. I received a press release just recently from MSC Cruises. They have 12 ships. They're building 11 more. I mean, big boat cruising is phenomenal. But what's much more interesting, this Saturday I'm getting on an airplane and flying to Alaska to do an uncruise, a small ship cruise. And that's where there'll be just 40 or 50 people on a very small boat. And so, you know, you won't have the big buffets, you won't have the huge theaters and entertainment and casinos and all of those things. But we'll be focusing on the nature and the environment and the actual experience of being in Alaska. So I think that speaks a lot to a next trend that more and more people are really into very authentic experiences. Sure, you know, Disney World and places like that will always be popular for what they are, but like Carol Lee says, the national parks are 100 years old this year. There is nothing more authentic, nothing more American really than our national parks. And I think there's a huge demand in travelers now that they want to have a unique and an authentic experience. And I think both, you know, the small ship cruising and national parks, those things speak to that.
We're talking today with two women steeped in experience with and passion for the travel industry. Let's hone in on travel over 40-50. What are the stats for the group? How do they travel? What are some of the reasons for the increase in their travel? What is the most popular destination for them? And assuming we're talking about baby boomers, what does the listener need to know about this group en masse in terms of their travel interest and dollars? Carol Lee?
Well, one of the biggest things that we're seeing is the fact that you have more people 40 and 50 plus that are interested in active adventures. You know, when we say active adventures, sometimes people say, oh, you know, it's like your 28-year-old guy that's out there doing that. But the reality is the average adventure traveler these days is a 47-year-old female. That's a surprise to most people. But the truth is, particularly among women, they're interested in getting out and having, as Diana said, authentic experiences that get them out of the hotel. It's not just about spa and relaxation. It's about exploring the great outdoors. It's about trying things that they've never tried before, whether that's an adventurous trek that they might do, whether that's a kayaking experience, but really trying something that gets them out of their day-to-day. And so while we're, you know, still seeing the popularity of cities like London, Paris, and Rome, we're getting to see a lot of active adventure travelers explore South America, exploring Asia, going to India, particularly among female travelers.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And I would agree with you 100% on that. And we mentioned a little bit earlier also heritage travel and tracing your family roots. That is huge in this age group, and the number of opportunities and insights that come to me from new agencies opening up and new travel companies focusing on this is just really impressive. Personally, I did a trip about 2 years ago to Wales because my family is from Wales, and it was such a rich experience. I mean, you could go to Wales and just walk around, but having this guide there and taking us to the little villages and things where my great-great-great-great-great, you know, when you could see their names on the tombstones and things, it was a thrill beyond words. That, again, gets back to that authentic experience, but maybe by the time you're in your 40s and 50s, you appreciate that type of thing a little bit more than maybe in your 20s and 30s.
And what are some of the ancillary services which are springing up to cater to this group now? Carol Lee?
You know, what we're really seeing is a lot less cookie cutter trips. It used to be that, you know, everybody that took their vacation to Hawaii got the same exact Hawaiian vacation experience. And now people are looking to customize their trips to really coincide with what their interests are. So, for instance, if you're a real foodie, you might still be planning that trip to Paris, France, because you've always dreamed of going there, but you might be doing it through the lens of what would a foodie be interested in? What are the markets you'd want to see while you're there? What are the restaurants you want to go to? What are the culinary tours? Instead of just making your, you know, your hit list of attractions and checking that box. So really customizing the type of experience that you're having. And that is huge, whether you're a foodie or whether you're an animal, you know, you're really into seeing animals and wildlife, whether you're into art appreciation, that customized experience is key.
Diana?
I would agree very much with that. As soon as she was talking about foodie walking tour or foodies, my goodness, we visited Berlin and looking for all the, you know, we didn't want to just see the Berlin Wall and Checkpoint Charlie and everything, and started doing our research and found there was a walking tour of restaurants in East Berlin that had been functioning there since the days before the wall. So we did a walking tour and sat down and had their special dishes and everything and talked to the owners, who sometimes they were second and third generation, about how their businesses had changed and everything. And that was so authentic. It was so focused on food and history and culture. It just was everything that we wanted in an experience of Berlin. And, of course, then we did get our pictures made at Checkpoint Charlie and all of those other things. But we feel like we understood Berlin and Berliners a lot better after that experience.
What 21st century technology has had the greatest impact on the travel industry? Would it have to be the Internet, hands down?
I mean, I really think these days it's mobile. Because from being able to have the internet in your hands has allowed both researching travel on the go, booking travel, and engaging with a destination once you're there so much easier, even more than the invention of the internet has been this ability to carry it around everywhere you go.
Absolutely. Everything is about making it mobile, and the fact that you can have language translation on your phone and currency translation on your phone and all of these things, and you know, you don't have to be afraid of getting lost in the streets in Paris because your phone's right there and tells you where you are, and you can program them in back to your hotel. And, yeah, I think the mobility and having that right on you has for me personally, we've talked a little bit about female travelers, but female solo travelers are very important. They're very important demographic, and I travel a lot on my own. And I did this before iPhones and things were so popular. I feel so much more comfortable having that in my hand. Mm-hmm. I feel just a little bit safer and those kinds of things. So I would think mobile technology is it.
Carol Lee, very quickly, what do you foresee for the future of travel 10, 20, and even 50 years from now?
You know, one thing I know is going to happen, because we're seeing this pattern already, is that Americans in increasing numbers will travel abroad. And that, as Diana had mentioned, only brings great benefits in terms of opening our eyes to a different perspective, a global perspective. We'll see this happen. It's becoming easier with more airlines offering direct service to cities around the world from cities that didn't used to have it, whether it's, you know, Minneapolis or Salt Lake, not just seaside cities right now like New York or San Francisco or LA that have this direct service. So we're going to see more people traveling abroad. We're going to see more experience-driven travel experiences. You know, people want to really understand how the locals live. They want to not just sit on a bus and see something through the window, or, you know, check the box of, oh, I've been to this museum and I've seen this, you know, this icon. But they want to talk to local people. They want to eat with local people. They want to, you know, get hands-on and see how things are made in the place that they visit. Those types of experiences will become even more important down the road.
Mm-hmm. And very quickly, Diana, what would you like to leave the listener with today? What final thought?
Oh, my goodness. First of all, if you don't have a passport, get one. But there's so much richness around the world, but there's also a lot of richness right here in the U.S. Every once in a while, my husband and I were so excited about some far-off destination, and then we go, oh, my God, we have not been to a certain little corner of the U.S., which often we enjoy just as much as some global international experience. So basically, get out there. Don't be afraid. Open your mind and open your heart to what else is in the world, because it's there's just so much and it's so fabulous. So go away somewhere.
We've been talking today with two women involved in various aspects of the travel industry. Carol Lee Barnes can be found at www.aboutdci.com, and Diana Lambden Meyer can be found at mojotraveler.com, also on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you so much, Carol Lee and Diana, for being my guests. I have my palate wetted again, so I may take off tonight for a parts unknown. So thank you.
Hello. Thank you, guys.
I'm Sima Shapiro. To the listener, thank you so much for joining us today. And until next time, I hope you take care.